you can get away with not having NFL size or not having NFL athleticism, but you can't not have both.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur 87. Folge vom Couch Podcast. Keine Ahnung, wie viele Wochen, Stunden, Minuten es sind. Es ist halt bei Sonderfolgen immer so ein Problem. Frohen Mittwoch, frohe Mitte der Woche. Wir melden uns. Nein, wir nehmen am Sonntag auf, aber also dieses Intro. Die Folge ist jetzt schon gut eine Woche alt. Vielleicht etwas sogar über eine Woche. Aber war gut, oder Simon?
War geil. Also ich finde es schön, im Intro das Recap zu machen.
Das Recap von der Folge? Es soll ja nur der Anschmecker sein.
Der Anschmecker. Also genau. Es wird sehr gut gewesen sein, wenn ihr in einer Stunde fertig seid mit dem Podcast.
Ja, ihr werdet froh sein, euch die Gedanken von Andre Simone, seines Zeichens Analyst für BSN Denver, unsere Freunde von BSN, da ist er auch am Start und wird euch einiges zu College Football, zu den Rookies erzählen.
Von diesem Jahr und vom nächsten Jahr.
Genau, hatten leider nur eine Stunde Zeit. Wollten mit ihm ja eigentlich unser Draft Recap machen. Das kann man quasi als das werten. Ist jetzt vielleicht ein bisschen verspätet. Aber ich würde mal sagen, es hat sich gelohnt, die Wartezeit, weil ja, der hat einiges zu erzählen. Wir hätten, wie gesagt, noch ein bisschen
länger zuhören können.
Ja, länger zuhören können und auch ein bisschen länger mehr oder mehr Zeit füllen können, sagen wir mal so. Wir hatten noch ein paar Fragen mehr, aber ein zweiter Teil ist auf jeden Fall in Planung. Das wird vielleicht nicht mehr diese Offseason passieren, vielleicht Mitte der Saison, vielleicht erst vor dem nächsten Draft, aber ihn da zu bekommen, wäre natürlich Gold wert, weil, wie gesagt, ich kenne wenige, die so in-depth Ahnung haben. Er ist halt auch einer, sage ich auch gleich noch, einer meiner Inspirationen gewesen, sich mit dem Thema College und Rookies so intensiv zu beschäftigen, weil es halt nochmal ein Riesenfeld ist und ja, einfach Bock macht in gewisser Weise und damit so jemandem drüber zu sprechen, der so ein Wissen hat und das mit uns teilt, ist immer sehr schön. Von daher wünsche ich euch viel Spaß.
Genau.
Und
gelabert. Wird zu.
Genau. Okay, today we are joined by Andre Simone, who in a way is one of the main reasons for the huge interest I developed for college football with his draft podcast for BSN Denver. We first wanted to do our draft recap with him, but then our regular work made it quite difficult. We already announced that we had an expert, and then I even got many requests when this pod will be happening. So finally we are here. Andre, would you like to introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, hi everyone. Honored to be here. I started on an Italian podcast about the NFL draft and college football and the NFL, so always have a soft spot in my heart for European fans, because I, growing up in Italy myself, I know how hard it is sometimes to follow it and the kind of dedication it takes to stay up late night and watch games and just develop this interest. So you are my kind of people, so I couldn't say no when you requested for me. So really looking forward to this, and I think it'll be lots of fun.
Yeah, we really appreciate you being here. Just tell us a little bit about you. What do you do? I already mentioned you work for BSN Denver. So just give a little heads up.
Yeah, my mother's American, but my father's Italian, so I grew up in the States. But, you know, we always were big Broncos fans. And after doing university here and getting a degree in communications and journalism, I did some translation work for many years and then kind of had a quarter-life crisis and decided, you know, I was tired of doing boring work in a cubicle and I wanted to, you know, get and do my passion for sports, and that kind of started everything, and it's been a long process, but now I'm a full-time sports analyst, I suppose, at BSN Denver, which is quite an honor, and yeah, I do all their draft coverage, I do all our film analysis on the NFL and primarily the Broncos, I do our game grades after each game, so that's really kind of intensive. I track every single play and I That track some special stats that I like to keep track of for offensive line and defensive line and coverage stats and that kind of thing. So I'm really the football analyst for BSN, and then I do some stat work for other sports. I've done betting and gambling stuff on the NFL and college football in the past. And as you mentioned, the reason you kind of found out about me, Luca, is that I also have a weekly draft podcast. And that is focused on the Broncos a little more, but because it's on the draft and we do it year round, we really talk more about college football and prospects. So if you're interested in that, check that out. We're on a small break right now, but we'll be back at it maybe late July, definitely early August to talk about college football. And that's on the BSN Broncos podcast feed, which you can find on Spotify and iTunes and all over the place. And we do that every Friday. That might change this year, but we'll still be doing a weekly draft podcast. So,
Can we get an exclusive? What are the plans? Are you
no,
changing the spot, or
I
what
would
are you doing
just,
with the pod?
yeah, we would just change the date. I don't think there's
Okay.
going to be much more than that.
All
And
right.
we might have a few more guests, a few more analysts. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, there might be some special things in the work, but not ready to announce that yet. Sorry.
Yeah, by the way, I'm always available if you need me
Great. Yeah.
to
If
come
you're
on.
doing your big board and spending 70 hours on an Excel spreadsheet to do 300 prospects, we'll have you on the line real soon here.
Today in this episode, like you already said, the draft is your specialty. We want to focus on this year's rookies and give some outlook on the next year college football season. Maybe you can tell us about some players we and our listeners should keep an eye on, as college football this year will be available to a much broader audience in Germany, because
Awesome.
the main broadcaster has gotten some rights to present one game on Saturdays. I guess they'll always show a little bit of Alabama and Clemson and Georgia, all the big teams. But I will be really looking forward to it, because it's such a difference to the NFL
Yeah.
in some ways, and it's special.
Yes.
If we still have some time at the end, I would like to play a little game with you. Let's see. I know you have 1 hour to talk with us. But do you know the game Stump the Truck they play on the third day on NFL Network?
Yes, I do, and I'm sure I won't do too well on Stump the Truck, but I'm up for the challenge.
I mean, you knew Wyatt Parker. We talked a little bit on Twitter about him.
Yeah.
I tried to get some information before he came on our pod, and yeah, maybe let's see how you do. I guess we take it at that time.
Fantastic.
First, I have to ask some selfish questions, as it's a rare opportunity to hear from an analyst firsthand. I'm really interested in how you do your evaluation process. What's the process behind it? Where do you start? What do you look for? And how do you work on analyzing all those draft prospects?
Yeah, well, when I first started really digging into the tape and doing my own rankings and stuff, I'd start with the bigger names, and then it just spirals out of control. Once you start to get an appetite for it, then you hear about some prospect you hadn't heard about before, and you go and watch his tape and look into the stats and analyze him. And but now, I've been doing it for so long, and I watch so much college football because of my job and because of the draft work I do, that it kind of happens organically, where even, this year, as soon as the draft was over, I already had started on my rankings for 2020, because, some guys I had already studied in depth because I thought they would declare for this year's draft and then ended up staying in school. So I already feel good about them. And then there's other players that they just stand out on tape. I mean, they're stars in college football. It's impossible not to notice them. And so the rankings are just always kind of being created. And I just watch lots and lots of college football. And the more you do this stuff, the more time you put in, the easier it is to notice, oh, this guy, he has the athleticism, he has the size, let me check his stats. Like, oh yeah, he's been productive. I better keep him, keep an eye out for him and stuff like that. And it just comes from following college football week in and week out, and watching lots of tape and watching lots of NFL tape and getting a better idea of how what skills translate and what skills might not translate. And that's, I mean, that in particular, what skills translate and what skills don't translate, is really what fascinated me about the draft and kind of allowed me to gravitate towards this. Guys like Tim Tebow or Quentin Griffin, some of my favorite players coming out of college, where then for whatever reason it didn't work out in the NFL, and having to learn, like, just being a good college player doesn't necessarily mean you're a good NFL player. And trying to teach myself why that is really what got it started. And now, that just snowballs. So I don't know. Maybe that's too generic of an answer, but
No,
that's
what have you identified as being the main aspects of a prospect to make it in the NFL?
Well, I mean, it varies by position. I think there are some positions where being productive and being a good college player actually most of the time kind of does translate to the NFL. But, it's really essential that you have, I always say, you can get away with not having NFL size or not having NFL athleticism, but you can't not have both. And players who don't have both those skills, it's just so hard. You're really playing an uphill battle against the kind of elite talents that are in the league. So you really need at least one of those two things. You can be like Phil Lindsay or Austin Ekeler, who are some of my best calls, right? Very few people thought those guys would become NFL players, and quickly they've proven me right. Of course, they're local products, so I was able to kind of have my eye on them before others did. But, those are both undersized guys, but they definitely have NFL athleticism. And I think people underrated that athleticism and the ability to transfer it to translate to the NFL. But if they were undersized and didn't have NFL athleticism, they would really, they'd have just about no shot. And then, I think the part that's really fascinating is with quarterbacks, because the game that is played in college football is completely different from the game that's played in the NFL. And obviously the NFL is actually adapted. In most sports it'd be the other way. The college game would be adapting to what the pros are doing. But in the NFL, more and more what we're seeing is the college game is kind of kickstarting the trends that then happen in the NFL. And, 6, 7 years ago, I was saying, oh, why don't we see more RPO and why don't we see more spread offenses in the NFL? This stuff works so well and it's so hard to stop. And slowly we've seen that's the case, and that's happening. Though I think in the NFL, you always see counter trends occur. So, for years, people still write and say this all the time. The NFL is a passing league first and this and that. And it definitely is. But I think the last few years, we've started to see a counter trend of the running game coming back. And that's because with the NFL becoming more of a passing league, then what happened? Defenses adjusted. So defenses became lighter. We started to see fewer and fewer defenses with three linebackers and more defenses with five defensive backs. And once that happened, the defensive counter trend to the offensive trend then sparked a counter trend from the offense. And you're seeing more teams run the ball, like the Patriots this year really became a running offense. That's what allowed them to win the Super Bowl. They were just a ground and pound, use that fullback and just pound away at these lighter athletic defenses. And that's really a joy. The scheme of the game always keeps you always got to be a step ahead or you're going to fall behind in the NFL. But anyways, with quarterback evaluations, it can be really tricky. And you gotta, I always say, you might watch a game and in spread attacks, there's 50 throws a game from a single quarterback when you watch the tape. Well, really, of those 50, eight might be actual NFL throws that will translate. So you really got to put an importance on those throws and try to keep an eye out for what are NFL throws and what are just, college throws where it's simple reads, wide open windows, and it doesn't take too much. But I mean, I could go on for the entire hour about this and go through position by position, because it's yeah, I mean, in college, another thing with the offensive line. Now with spread attacks, these offensive linemen rarely even play with their hand in the ground. So they need to learn an entirely different stance. And
Yeah.
evaluating them in pass protection is much harder because they're standing up already. The quarterback's getting the ball out in 2 seconds or less, and they're really not tested that much. And a position like the offensive and defensive line, or even cornerback and wide receiver, I put a lot of value in how those specific players play when they're matched up against other NFL talents. And that plays a big, big part in my evaluation. So, there's all these different tricks I've learned through the years.
Beyond that, beyond the stat part, the production part, and watching tape and analyzing it, is there also a part in your evaluation process, or is it too difficult to evaluate, for example, an attitude of a player, character, or is it in college football too early to really evaluate those aspects for becoming an NFL player?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And that's what I found has been the hardest part for me as a kind of, not even the hardest part. It's the blind spot that I have as an analyst, being more of an analyst rather than a journalist, is that sometimes character is the defining difference between a player that makes it and a player that doesn't. Character and injuries. And I'm not a doctor, and I can only get so much information from the web or the few sources that I have, or even, talking to scouts or going to the Senior Bowl and talking to other media members or reaching out to media members who covered that player at that school. You can only get so much about injuries and character. And with all great athletes, that's ultimately the great ones always have the great character, that great competitive spirit, that great inner drive. And the players that I am able to talk to and sit down with, or even just interview briefly, it can be easier because you kind of get a feel for their personality and the stuff they tell you stands out. And that's easy, that's a little easier to pick up on. But, we're talking about my big board is usually 350 prospects. Only what, a little over 250 get drafted. So even that's overkill. But, the NFL has to evaluate over 500. So, that's definitely the biggest problem, because guys can be spectacular on tape or they can have those elite flashes, and then you realize after a couple years in the NFL that they just didn't have the inner drive, or the injuries that they had were too hard to overcome and change their game enough to where they just weren't able to succeed. And I think it's an issue that even NFL teams have, even with scouts going on campus and investigating, doing all sorts of stuff. It's hard to truly know what drives a person and what makes them great.
All right, yeah, we talked with Wyatt. We talked especially about the mental aspect, and what from what we could judge him, he had it. He was very, very focused, very determined. Unfortunately, he didn't get drafted, and I believe he didn't get signed as an undrafted free agent
No.
as well. But I believe that this is a special thing you need to have. So let's get into the draft.
Yeah.
Which teams stood out to you as winners or losers? Maybe give us three winners and three losers each, and we talk a little bit about their drafts.
Sounds great. Yeah, I thought the Arizona Cardinals. Now, the way I do my grades and evaluations, it's not, I hate when, the Cleveland Browns have three first round picks and everyone gives them an A plus, and it's like, well, I mean, when you have three first rounders, you should have come away with three first round talents. Like, that's not anything special. That's just doing your job. For me, that's a C-level draft unless you really got some steals. So I try to do my evaluations based on the value of each pick and what was the value you were able to get. And the Arizona Cardinals, based on my rankings, got five players in the top 50.
Wow.
And players in the top 50 typically are guys who should be starters within the first two seasons and should be high-end starters. And they were able to get seven guys in my top 100, which is just about unprecedented. And so to accomplish that, even though they obviously had the first pick in just about every round, and they added a second-round pick with the Josh Rosen trade, which I didn't think was a great trade or great value. But again, I put trades to the side. I'm just evaluating based off the value of each pick. So, I mean, and again, the top 100 for me is important, because if you're a top 100 player, that means that to me, I'm saying within your first 3 years, within your rookie contract, you should be an NFL starter. So to come away with seven potential starters from one draft class is really extraordinary. So I thought they killed it. I thought they just did a marvelous job. Across the board, you know, Kyler Murray, I love the two wide receivers they got in and Hakeem Butler. Byron Murphy, I think, is a just extremely talented cornerback. Zach Allen is one of my favorite players. And Deontay Thompson, I know the tape was inconsistent at Alabama, but I think he has that rare trait that most teams in the NFL covet, which is having lots of range sideline to sideline and being able to be that deep safety, and has also shown flashes to be physical when he's coming downhill and as a tackler. So I really think with those guys I just mentioned, they just they did an outstanding job.
All right. And a loser?
A loser. You know, and this is 2 years in a row, I thought the Colts didn't do a great job. Obviously, the Colts, it turns out last year, did an amazing job.
Yeah.
Because, you know, arguably, Darius Leonard should have been Rookie of the Year. And if we considered offensive linemen as candidates to be Rookie of the Year, Quentin Nelson would have been right up there. So I was off on that. Though I did like some of the other picks they made, but those top two picks I didn't love, and at least in their rookie seasons, they were proven correct by making those picks. But again, this season, I didn't think, I didn't love their draft. Of course, they traded down and added some picks, so they added value. And I don't mind the Rocky Sin pick, even though 34th overall I thought was a little high, especially ahead of some of the cornerbacks that were still left, like Greedy Williams. Ben Banigou in the second round, the pass rusher out of TCU, I just didn't love that pick. He's a guy who I watched and talked about a decent amount on the podcast, so I watched him quite a bit, but I didn't see anything really special. He was more of a workout warrior for me, and too inconsistent, but we'll see how he works out. I did like what they did with Paris Campbell and Bobby Okereke and Marvell Tell, the safety out of USC, I thought was great value. But, you know, Kerry Willis, the safety out of Michigan State, doesn't really inspire me. EJ Speed, the linebacker out of the small school Tarleton State, don't know anything about him. So in general, I just don't think they did as much as they could have with quite a few picks. You know, they had five picks in the top 110. So I didn't think they got the greatest value, though. Now that I look at my rankings, they weren't the lowest rated, but they were one of my three lowest graded draft classes.
If you compare that to the Cardinals and the players you mentioned there, that's true. We, for example, we had my beloved Broncos as one of the winners with great value.
Not biased
D-Lock.
At all.
Right, right. never.
I believe you and AJ were not as high on Noah Fant in the first round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, especially AJ, because he
Ja,
He doesn't think tight ends are worthy of a first round pick, and I mean, history would show that he's correct. Rarely has a first round tight end proved to be great value because it's a position that's not the most valuable. It's one of the two or three least valuable offensive positions. So to really get the value of a first round pick with a tight end, you need that tight end to essentially be one of the top five best players at his position. And so that'll be a bit of a tall task for Noah Fant, but I think I was actually in the middle of writing a film room on him today. I think that in this scheme, he could be a little more than a tight end. So there might be some added value. But, you know, the thing about Noah Fant is they were able to get him after moving down 10 spots in the first round. And that really allowed them to for
Drew
me,
Lock.
in right, Drew Lock, Dalton Risner, Draymond Jones really do a terrific job in day two, which is usually the 2 rounds where you're typically going to get the best value. And those all 4 of those players, even Noah Fant, were all ranked in my top 50. And as I just explained, that's really good value. Those should be 4 high-end starters. And, you know, tight end isn't a valuable position, but quarterback's certainly a valuable position. Right tackle is a very valuable position. You know, even mediocre right tackles are getting paid 10 million, even more a season. And, you know, interior pass rushers like Draymond Jones, that's become a very valuable position in today's NFL. And then I thought Justin Hollins was a nice pickup as well. And I liked what they did in the undrafted. So, yes, we were down on the Broncos after day one and very high on them after day two and at the end of the draft. I really thought John Elway, at least on paper, the last two drafts, the Broncos general manager has really kind of changed his draft philosophy. He's going after more high character guys, which is something we just talked about. And he's doing that by targeting specifically team captains and what have you. And it at least by my rankings, which certainly aren't the end all be all, but it's what I have to go off of. He's had two great drafts 2 years in a row. And having interviewed both Dalton Risner and Drew Lock several times at the Senior Bowl, they were two of the highest character guys I talked to out there. And, you know, there's over 60 prospects in Mobile every year. And, I mean, a lot this year that got drafted in the first 2 rounds. So the new staff there at the Senior Bowl did a great job of bringing in players. And yeah, so I thought the Broncos had one of the best classes and really addressed some high character guys that should kind of help. You know, once Peyton Manning and Marcus Ware left, there was a bit of a lack of leadership in that locker room. And I think with guys like them, guys like Phil Lindsay, they've managed to not just add talent, but add some high character guys who could kind of be the leaders for this team for years to come, and that could prove to be very important.
So let's take a look at some players who were overdrafted or underdrafted. Anyone that comes to your mind when I say overdrafted or underdrafted? For example, I mean, I would be interested in your take on the Daniel Jones pick because it was the like all everybody was negative on the pick. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I was at the highest on Daniel Jones. He got drafted 6th overall, and he was the 68th best prospect for me. He had a 3rd round grade and got drafted in the top 10. And so here's the thing about Daniel Jones. His accuracy doesn't stand out, and his arm strength doesn't stand out. And that was true when I watched his tape extensively at Duke. And that proved to be true when I watched him for 2 days of practice. Sadly, this year we only got to see 2 days of practice because one was closed for weather and they practiced indoor and that wasn't open to media. But even in that day, from the reports we got, he threw several interceptions. So Daniel Jones, I get the appeal because he's a prototypical size, pretty good athlete. Outstanding pocket presence, like really, he's a guy that's unfazed by oncoming pressure, stands tough in the pocket, can deliver the ball on time, shows decent accuracy on the intermediate throws, so not deep throws, not short throws, intermediate throws. Does a nice job there, but just don't see the arm power. The touch on the football can be good, but not consistent enough. And the ball, you know, when I talk accuracy, what I really mean is ball placement, which means throwing guys open, leading guys in tight windows. When you're throwing to the sideline, you need to put it on their outside shoulder, because if you put it on their inside shoulder, it might be the difference of 2 centimeters, not even. But that difference of 2 centimeters can be the difference between converting 3rd and 10 on a crucial game-winning drive or throwing a pick six, because you threw it on his inside shoulder, cornerback is able to pick it off, and he's off to the races. So that's really, I mean, a crucial part. And then I'll be honest, the thing that turned me off about Daniel Jones, beside the scout report I just gave you, was that at the Senior Bowl, he wasn't impressive during interviews, came off as very monotone, not insightful, not excited, not a guy who I would say, oh, he's going to go into a locker room and people are going to follow him as their quarterback.
Especially and then, with Eli in the room right now.
Right, right. Or, and, you know, bigger name guys like Saquon Barkley and stuff like that. You need to earn that respect from your stars. And then after that, which was even worse, he cut off any interviews to media entirely. He said, you know, you have to go through his agent to be interviewed, which in 2 years of being at the Senior Bowl, we'd never seen anything like that. I mean, these aren't media types who are grilling these prospects or asking tough questions, or, you know, we're just trying to get to know these prospects more, and it's in little 5 minutes after practice, you know, just brief moments. It's a very small commitment. And so for someone to go to a market like New York, where it's going to be scrutinized that much, and he already struggled with the media at the Senior Bowl, I'd have serious, serious concerns. So I did not like the Daniel Jones pick at all, especially in front of someone like Dwayne Haskins, who I think is just a phenomenal quarterback. I just think that's a very risky pick, and I hope that the Giants were able to vet him and his character more, because if my experience from the Senior Bowl is an accurate experience, he's really going to struggle in a market like New York.
Yeah. And when I say underdrafted guys, what comes to my mind at first is you already mentioned Deontay Thompson. And one I had very high grades on was Mac Wilson, who went to the Browns.
Yeah.
What do you think about them? I guess you can count both of them as underdrafted players, right?
Yeah. For my rankings, they certainly were. Interesting. Both Alabama guys, both guys who play over the middle of the field, who were really high on rankings early in the year when they had some outstanding games. I remember when Mac Wilson, for a stretch there, by a lot of people, was getting ranked ahead of Devin White. And Deontay Thompson was the consensus top safety in the draft, you know, in September and October. If you looked at most rankings online, that's what you would have found. And they really fell off because of some inconsistent play. You know, Deontay, some people will say he's good at a lot of things, but maybe not elite in coverage and, you know, having to turn and run with some of the more athletic tight ends or wide receivers he played with, which I think he can handle that just fine. And Mac Wilson, some people will tell you he's not physical enough, you know, that maybe got overly scrutinized, maybe a little prospect fatigue, which is a term we use in scouting where, you know, you've been watching these guys for so many years, you get a little, you start to nitpick them more so than a guy like Kyler Murray, who only played one season, and you just get enamored.
I think that's the case for NFL teams as well. So that's maybe players are better advised to leave college earlier so they don't get that fatigue and can show bad plays on tape.
In some ways, yes. I mean, it's part of the human element. After a while, it gets boring watching the same guy over and over, and you kind of take the things that they do well for granted, and you start to scrutinize them more. I think that definitely happens, even for NFL evaluators. And Mac Wilson, I just think that, sure, he's far from a perfect player, but the things that he does well to me are much more valuable than the things that he doesn't do well. And that's, his coverage ability is out of this world.
Oh, I'd love to see him at the Broncos. Just
Oh, I know.
one pick before he get drafted. As we are starting to give some betting advice this year on the podcast, who are your favorites for defensive and offensive rookie of the year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for Offensive Rookie of the Year, the real favorite should be Josh Jacobs. And I don't know how, his contract situation. He's one of the few first rounders to have yet to be signed. That would scare me a little bit if I'm a betting person. But he would be an interesting bet. Maybe at a better value, you could look at someone like DK Metcalf. And I would, depending on what the odds are, I think Dwayne Haskins would be very interesting. But I think Josh Jacobs kind of has to be your favorite because he should have every opportunity to start and get lots of touches in Oakland in an offense that has a lot more weapons now. So I think defenses should be more focused on Antonio Brown and those guys. And Josh Jacobs might be able to find a little more space. And with the same thinking, that running backs have an easier time succeeding early on in their careers. Often, Defensive Rookie of the Year will go to a linebacker, and I think Devin White could really be a guy that, puts up a ton of tackles in his first season. And Devin Bush would also fall in that category. I'm not giving you any sleepers here necessarily. These are pretty common sense picks. I will say, if there's a sleeper on the Defensive Rookie of the Year side, I would look out for Jerry Tillery, who's just incredibly talented. When he's on, he's one of the best players in the entire draft. The problem is he was inconsistent and wasn't always on. But I think in that scheme where you have Bosa and Ingram and offensive lines really need to focus on them, someone like Tillery with that combination of length and athleticism will really wreck backfields and could be very, very productive early on in his career. And reminds me a bit of Chris Jones, and how he was coming out of Mississippi State in a lot of ways. And, Chris Jones really broke out last year, not his rookie season, but who knows, maybe Jerry Tillery jumps the gun and breaks out a year early and could be a good value bet as far as Defensive Rookie of the Year goes.
Yeah, just this morning we talked about him, right, Simon?
We have for the last few weeks we go through every division in our weekly podcast and analyze teams, rosters, coaches, schedules, etc. And today was AFC West Day, so Luca talked 2 hours about the Broncos and a few moments for the Chargers were left, and that were one of our best
Standouts,
picks at all. In the draft this year, because it's kind of a perfect fit for the Chargers here with Bosa and Ingram on the edge, and this secondary and needing help in the inside D line. That's one thing that could be very interesting for a defense that's great right now and could be even better.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy who, when the Broncos traded down to 20th overall, I was really hoping they would take Tillery, but they ended up taking him, so.
Let's go a little bit deeper into the draft and let's get to one player for the first 4 rounds. And I want to get one player from you who will have an instant impact. We have suggestions as well. Our number one suggestion is
Jerry
Jerry Tillery.
Yep.
Because like you said, it's a perfect fit. Just go through and tell us one prospect you think can have a really big impact this year for his team.
Yeah, Tillery would have been my pick as well. I think Dwayne Haskins, it's rare. It's very hard for quarterbacks to have an immediate impact right away. But I think in that scheme, Haskins, and with the traits he have that really fit the NFL, I think he's a guy who could be that rare quarterback who does kind of have an immediate impact early on. And Kyler Murray will be very interesting because he's a great scheme fit as
Yeah,
well.
no trust in Kyler for offense rookie of the year from you.
Yeah, it, my thing is I'm not the greatest believer in Cliff Kingsbury. I think they could maybe be the kind of team that's a bit of an NFL darling for the first 4 weeks, and then NFL defensive coordinators get the tape on them and start to figure out their tendencies and start to realize that it's actually a pretty simple offense to key in on and pick up on, and then all of a sudden both Kingsbury and Murray become a lot easier to stop. That's my only reluctance, but you know, I was a Kyler fan very early on. I wish he would have gone later, like 20th overall or something, and I could he could still be mine, you know, but now he's become of the world.
Yeah, the hype got too big.
Right,
Maybe sooner
right.
to some team who have an O-line would be kind of good for Kyler Murray, though that's
Yeah.
maybe to Arizona next year.
Yeah, a little help on the line with def, and you know, I like that wide receiver group, but they're all so young. I mean, it's
Yeah.
nothing. It's three of their top four wide receivers are going to be first or second year guys with Christian Kirk and Butler and Isabella. So I think it'll just take a little while for everyone to come along before that can have success. But here's an underrated name. I didn't talk about him in Offensive Rookie of the Year. Because I don't think he'll be most productive, but I think he can have a big impact in that scheme as a whole. And that's Marquise Brown, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma, who went to the Ravens. In that offense, with Lamar Jackson and you know the running quarterback element and them doing more RPOs and stuff like that, it's already tough to defend. Now you're going to add Marquise Brown, who's the fastest wide receiver in this draft. I think he'd already be one of the three to five fastest wide receivers in the entire NFL. And you have him both stretching the field vertically and being able to fake those jet sweeps out the backfield or take direct handoffs and stuff like that. I think his impact, just having his speed on the field, not necessarily, it might not translate to production right away, but I think he's really going to open things up for the entire offense. Their young tight ends, their running game. He's going to open everything up. Lamar Jackson was never the most accurate to the sideline, but he was always very accurate over the middle of the field. Well, Marquise Brown might be running a lot of routes like a slot wideout and be running over the middle of the field. So that might really help Lamar Jackson. So there's another name for you. I know you asked for just one, but I give you like three or four.
He's the wide receiver Joe Flacco never got in Baltimore. Second round, our suggestion was Juwan Taylor. What do you think about him? Slipping far down.
Yeah, I thought it was a great pickup by the Jaguars, who you know, many mock drafts were predicted to go after Juwan Taylor in round one in the top 10, and were then able to get him at the top of round two. And I think he's a great fit for what they're trying to build offensively, as far as you know, a run first attack, and already have a physical, athletic left tackle in Cam Robinson. Now you're able to add Juwan Taylor at right tackle, and that's really going to be an imposing offensive line for Leonard Fournette, who's one of the most imposing and punishing running backs in the league. So I really like that pick. I really thought it was good value, even though I always thought Juwan Taylor was overrated by media types. He wasn't my highest ranked offensive lineman by any means. he was 22nd on my board. So I always thought the top 10 talk was too rich, but to get him there at the third pick of the second round is really, really outstanding value. And we've talked about the two Broncos guys who I really think are great value. I've mentioned DK Metcalf, who in the betting section, who I think was a very good value. Another guy I would say is Elgton Jenkins, the 12th pick of the Green Bay Packers, the center out of Mississippi State. Talented center, a guy who can get to the second level and really do some great things. He was very highly ranked for me. So I think he could definitely have an immediate impact and kind of help that entire offense as a whole. I think he's a good fit in that Matt LaFleur offense.
Who's one third round that stood out to you? We had Chase Winovich, which we both really liked. We watched a lot of Michigan games the past season, and especially Simon was very high on him to pick the Patriots on at 77, one of our favorites of the draft as well.
Yeah, great pick by the Patriots, who I thought had another outstanding pick in the third round with Yodney Cajuste, the left tackle out of West Virginia. You know, I think they obviously have one of the best offensive line coaches in the entire NFL in Dante Scarnecchia, and to put Cajuste, who has all the raw tools to be a great offensive tackle, in his hands, it might take him a year or so, but I really think that could be a special pick for them. And, you know, at the very top of the round, I loved what the Cardinals did with Zach Allen. I really think Zach Allen can be a terrific, terrific player.
All right. Then let's get to a little bit of college talk. Yes. I already mentioned that it will be, well, hopefully will be bigger in Germany this year. And we'll have the chance to establish itself a little bit more. Yeah, so obviously this year everybody talked about the D-line class and how big it was, how great it was. From what I've heard and from what I've seen, the wide receivers have this reputation of the next group this year. What's your opinion? Who's the strongest and who's the weakest position group of the next draft?
Yeah, you said it absolutely correctly. The wide receiver class this year is out of this world. I obviously haven't done my rankings in depth yet, but I already have close to 10 guys in my top 30. So, you know, a third of the top 30 is made up by wide receivers, which is just unbelievable value. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about the quarterbacks already next year, and I think they're maybe a little overrated, but this is definitely a quarterback class that's very intriguing. I think just in general, you know, for fantasy football players, this 2020 draft will be a great draft because I think wide receivers is an unbelievable class. We haven't had a wide receiver class like this in several years. Quarterback class has lots of depth and lots of intriguing players. And I think the running back class, you know, after a down year last year, is once again a strong group, and even the offensive tackle class is better than we've had in a few seasons. So offensively, this is going to be one of the better drafts that we've seen in a while.
And from this great wide receiver group, who stands out for you? I guess LaVisca and JD are both two names everybody or most people have already heard about. Is there anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, CeeDee Lamb out of Oklahoma is just a freak. Just unbelievable, unbelievable talent. You have some just amazing speedsters like Jalen Reagor at TCU, Henry Ruggs at Alabama. You know, Tylan Wallace out of Oklahoma State was incredibly productive. Colin Johnson out of Texas is a massive wide receiver. With just a really imposing physical ability. Denzel Mims out of Baylor is a guy with good size but unbelievable speed. And I'm sure there's some guys that I'm forgetting. It's just that loaded of a wide receiver class. Donovan Peoples-Jones out of Michigan is up there. It's a special group for sure.
Yeah, really looking forward to watching them guys when I will prepare for the next year's draft. We also have to talk about quarterbacks because you always have to have a little QB talk.
I get it.
There are names like Tua, Justin Herbert, Jake Fromm, and Jacob Eason. Who needs of them, but maybe you have some other names for us, who needs to step his game up? Who has real NFL potential from your point of view? You already said you think they are a bit overrated. And I want to hear one boss QB prospect from you. Who you think has a chance to get into the top ranks or make his way in the NFL? Nobody has on his radar right now.
Yeah, I think Justin Herbert, the Oregon quarterback, has a lot of work to do. Obviously, the skill set he possesses is very impressive because he's got the size, he's got the athleticism, good, more than enough arm strength, and has shown flashes of NFL-type accuracy, you know, being able to squeeze the ball over the second level and right underneath the third level and throwing it with good timing and stuff. He had three games last year that were just unbelievable against three of the best defenses he played when he played against Stanford, Cal, and Washington. Was really, really good on top of his game. Everyone thought he'd be the top pick in the 2019 draft and then completely fell off. Part of that was injuries to his offensive line, and part of it are deficiencies in his game that I've noticed since I watched him live back at the start of the 2018 season when I went up to Wyoming to watch Josh Allen, the Buffalo quarterback, play against Oregon, and Herbert was just too slow in his decision making, not consistently accurate, holding on to the ball too long. And that's something that we kind of saw come back last year. He can try to do too much, and I don't think is necessarily that quick decision maker, which in today's NFL you need to be. You need to get the ball out quickly. You need to be able to go through your progressions. You can't always look to run or make big plays. Sometimes you just need to get the ball out quickly and accurately. And so he's got a long way to go, but I know a lot of people are high on him. Jake Fromm, to me, the Georgia quarterback, would be the overrated guy of the group. I think we see this happen often in college football, where there's a guy who is winning at a really good school, and we say, casual college football fans or casual NFL fans without watching too much say, oh, this guy's going to be a really good NFL quarterback. And then once their draft year comes, say someone like Jake Browning, people realize like, oh, this guy, not only is he not an NFL quarterback, he's not a very good college quarterback. And I think Fromm is that kind of guy. I think if Georgia had a better quarterback, they probably would have won back-to-back national championships the last 2 years instead of coming close and just missing out. Fromm has done some good things, but I don't see an elite arm. I don't see elite arm strength. I don't think he's a guy who's shown like tremendous accuracy in small NFL type windows. He's not a great athlete. Doesn't have great size. I don't see what gets you excited about him. I saw a great tweet a couple months ago that compared him to AJ McCarron. Only AJ McCarron was probably better. Like, AJ McCarron's bigger and might have a stronger arm. So I don't get what the hype is with Jake Fromm. I think people will wake up and realize that he's just been a wing quarterback in college. I think at best he reminds me of Andy Dalton, who is also a winning quarterback and has actually carved out a very good NFL career, considering where he was drafted and kind of what the expectations were coming in. But I don't see someone who's very special. As far as sleepers go, I think Kellen Mond out of Texas A&M, there's a lot to work with there, and he will still have a lot of very talented wide receivers, and he's being coached by Jimbo Fisher, who's one of the better offensive play callers in the college game, but also coaches more of a pro style offense than just the strictly spread or air raid attacks we see in college. He's a bit more coaches a system that would translate better to the NFL. So I'm excited about him. I think Sam Ehlinger out of Texas is very intriguing. I guess you mentioned him, Luca. Mm-hmm. And Jordan Love out of Utah State is a very intriguing player. He might be the guy who he's definitely on some people's radars, but he's not talked about a ton. And athletic guy who, in some ways does what Justin Herbert does, only he does it more consistently and better. So Jordan Love's definitely one to keep an eye on. That's a fun offense to watch at Utah State anyway. So even if Jordan Love doesn't live up to the hype I'm creating for him right now, you will still enjoy watching that offense, especially if you're an NFL fan and you think, oh, wow, this is quite different. So I hope they have some Utah State games in Germany, though I wouldn't hold my breath, I suppose.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. One thing at a time. First, Bama, Clemson, then give it a few years.
They need to get into this, so, yeah. But no word about Tua, though. Do you think he's the unanimous number one quarterback in this class, or is there anybody who can overcome him?
I think definitely the consensus number one right now, though I've noticed that for a lot of analysts, he's not the number one prospect. He's just the number one quarterback. And I think a lot of people are soured on how he ended the season because he is a guy that when, he's surrounded by such elite talent at Alabama, and almost always his wide receivers, his offensive linemen, are better than the defensive linemen they're facing or the cornerbacks they're facing. And that makes life easier for him. And, he's kind of that gunslinger. So he's not afraid to take shots. And when his guys are winning their one-on-one matchups just in their sleep so easily, he can do whatever he wants. And he looks like just a future Hall of Famer. When instead he's playing against more talented defenses, he's been caught off guard a little. He's also undersized, and there's some injury questions with him. So I think maybe the hype before the end of the season got a little overblown, and then we realized that he's human just like everyone else. And he too isn't perfect, but I certainly like him a lot. It'll be interesting because right now there's no left-handed quarterbacks in the NFL for whatever reason. The NFL coaches can be very rigid in their thinking sometimes and just want a right-handed quarterback because then that doesn't throw off the line or it doesn't throw off the bootleg throws and stuff like that. But, I still think Tua's the top guy, and I think that this year that Alabama offense will be as good, if not better, than they were last year because they have so much talent. I'm very much aware of his shortcomings as well, and we'll be keeping a close eye on him in those few games where he does play against defenses that can match up with Alabama talent-wise.
So we talked wide receivers and quarterbacks. What are some other prospects who are surefire top picks for you right now? Players who, when their teams are on TV this year here in Germany, our German listeners need to have an eye on.
Yeah, Chase Young, the defensive end out of Ohio State, is an unbelievable player. I think the best defensive player in my mind of this draft class, an incredible talent with his athleticism, the production he had. I think that he's got some deceptive power at the point of attack, which is something I've had to learn to value more when evaluating edge rushers, defensive ends, what have you. I think he can play in a 3-4 or a 4-3 defense, hand in the ground or standing up. I really think he's a special player at a premium position. And, Grant Delpit out of LSU, is an outstanding safety in this class, another surefire talent. I think he would have easily been the top safety taken in the 2019 draft if he was eligible, because he's just super physical but really athletic, very talented in coverage as well, kind of that complete safety. And I think safeties in general don't always present the greatest value. They're not the most valuable position. But then there's that rare safety that is so talented that can help in all areas of the game and can really take away the best tight ends and the best running backs and the best slot wide receivers in the game, that they just have a different value from other safeties. And Grant Delpit, to me, is that rare player. So there's a couple, and a little under the radar, I really like the two linebackers out of Alabama and Clemson. One is Isaiah Simmons, who was converted from safety to linebacker, and this guy is so physical, so just muscular and jacked up. You see him, he's just unbelievable. And then because he's a former safety, he flies around for a linebacker, but is also super physical. And same could be said about Dylan Moses out of Alabama, a guy who, when you watch Alabama tape, you know, to me, he clearly all year long was the better prospect to Mac Wilson. Even though I liked Mac Wilson, Moses is just a different level of player, that prototypical sideline linebacker who can also be very physical against the run and help you in coverage because he's so athletic.
All right. I know we are running a little out of time here. Are you up for the challenge, or should we make it happen another day?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
The first one is...
Oh, boy.
Is, I'll give you the name and tell us maybe the position, which school he is from, and maybe if you know from who he got drafted or if he was an signed undrafted free agent. The first one is Caden Ellis.
Caden Ellis. These are all rookies from this past life, right?
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know him.
He's a...
You stopped.
Me all neither.
Right. He's a linebacker from Idaho. He got drafted on at number 244 by the Saints in round 7.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe the second one, maybe the other way. He's a quarterback from Central Connecticut State. And he was an undrafted free agent signed by the Bengals.
Central Connecticut. I've never even heard of Central Connecticut State before. I pride myself in studying small school guys. I had guys on my board from North Dakota State, obviously, Northern Colorado, North Carolina AT&T, but no one from South. Southern Connecticut State.
Central Connecticut State.
Is that
State.
Right? Central. I mean, that. I think you made up that school, Luke. I'm protesting about that one.
It's Jake Doligala.
Wow.
Okay, let's try this one.
He didn't get drafted, though.
No, he was an undrafted free agent. Okay. Tavon Coney.
Tavon Coney is the linebacker out of Notre Dame, correct?
Right. He was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Raiders. And
surprised. I thought he was definitely a draft-worthy prospect. Yeah.
And the last one is from Mississippi State. He got drafted by the Colts in the sixth round at 199.
And Gary Green.
Yeah, Gary Green. All right. So Gary Green. You got us here. Two for two.
You have one more for me. Let's see if I could go three of five.
So you need
and get a passing grade
to get another one. All right.
Give me a second.
I get another one here.
Undrafted free agent, small schools.
Do you know? He's from a small school, Sunbelt Conference.
Okay.
Wide receiver from Louisiana Monroe. Drafted by the Atlanta Falcons. In the sixth round at 203. I never heard of him, to be fair.
Which round? And I studied so many wide receivers, too. Yeah, I don't know him.
Max
I don't.
Green.
I lost.
Maybe we get...
Ahmad Green, you said?
Marcus Green.
Marcus Green, okay.
Another Green, okay.
yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of this. You can do it all year round. You can follow so much college football. and there's still guys you don't know. It's amazing. It always keeps you interested. That's the beauty of this.
For me, it's I know this because, as you know, I did my board, and Simon often asked me about a player, and I always had to check again on the board because it's just so fucking much. You have so many players there, and even knowing those two, I think it's pretty impressive.
Oh, well.
All right, Andre. Thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate you taking your time. And maybe in the future you can come on again. I really wanted to hear more about your takes on NFL and college football development. I think this would be a great theme for an episode.
And of course.
Yeah. Please send my best regards to your colleagues, Ryan and Zach. Always, every day, looking forward to listening to the podcast. And take care. Have a great day. I believe right now it's 2 o'clock.
That's right.
PM, right?
Yep. Get to the Noah Fant and George Kittle tape for this next film room. So.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Really enjoy this. I really appreciate it. Keep up the good work. Keep spreading the word around Europe. I support everything you do.
Yeah, and check out BS and Denver. It's yes. worth it.
Yep.
Take care, and goodbye.
Bye.
Ja, das war doch ganz erfrischend. Hatte dich denn dazu bewegen können, Simon, nächstes Jahr noch ein bisschen mehr College Football zu konsumieren? Auch abseits von Run NFL. Also,
ja, ja, Luca. Er hat mich überzeugt. Nee, klar, also College Football kann man nie genug haben. Ist natürlich hartes Zeitinvestment. Also, dass man natürlich mitbringen muss, ob viel über NFL hinaus möglich ist, ist dann immer so eine Zeitfrage. Aber natürlich habe ich Bock. Sowieso über The Zone. Über Run jetzt entsprechend, vielleicht noch darüber hinaus, hat ein
der
oder andere.
Der ESPN-Player wird es noch nicht.
Der ESPN-Player wird es noch nicht. Ja, aber ja, ich denke mal, durch die Bundesliga, die man sich jetzt spart, hat man vielleicht ein bisschen mehr Zeit, auch am genau. Samstag für Football. Von daher, ja, ich bin mega gespannt. Naja, und allgemein klar, es ist ja zwangsläufig natürlich der Plan, sich da so ein bisschen weiter reinzudenken. Und es macht einem deutlich die Vorbereitung auf den Draft einfacher. Das ist das Schöne.
Ja, genau. Und man weiß ja jetzt auch, wo man darauf achten muss nächstes Jahr.
Eben.
Von daher, wir hoffen, euch hat das auch gefallen. Konntet unsere englischen Worte
entziffern.
Noch ertragen. Entziffern, ertragen. Wünschen euch weiterhin eine frohe Woche.
Und wir hören uns schon bald wieder. In 4 Tagen schon wieder.
Ja, es ist nicht mehr, weit. Bis zur NFC North.
Richtig, genau. Ja, genau.
Süd, Nord, East, West. So ist der Plan. Stimmt, haben wir gar nicht in der Folge gerade gesagt. Aber ja. Gut, gut. Wir verabschieden uns. Macht's gut. Haut rein.
Peace.